Between 1095 and the following 200 years, armies from Christendom moved in to Asia Minor and the Middle East, slaughtering as they go. In one conflict, the Christian general took out 2,500 Muslim prisoners and beheaded them.
That's presidential candidate Ralph Nader back in 2004 talking about the Crusades. Greetings and welcome to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Tonight we talk about the Crusades. You know, there is a lot of talk about the Crusades. It's one of those little phrases, those little terms that gets brought up all the time. Usually brings the conversation or the argument to a screeching halt. Someone says, well, yeah, what about the Crusades? They're usually lumped in with events like the Inquisition. How much do we know about the Crusades, and how much do we not know? We're going to try, hopefully, by the end of tonight's conversation, to make you a little better informed on what the Crusades were and what they weren't. Dr. Thomas Madden joins us here in Studio A this evening as we talk about the Crusades. Issues, Etc. is a live call-in program, and we are coming to you live this Sunday night, the 24th of July. We'll be responding to your phone calls and your email in the next 2 hours on the subject of the Crusades. 1-800-730-2727 is our call-in number. 1-800-730-2727. And our in-studio email address is issuesetc@kfuo.org. issuesetc@kfuo.org. Dr. Thomas Madden is a regular guest here on the program. He is professor and chair of the Department of History at St. Louis University. And he's author of the books The Fourth Crusade, The Conquest of Constantinople, and The New Concise History of the Crusades. Dr. Madden, welcome back.
Thank you, Todd. It's great to be here.
Let's start with the most obvious question that presses upon us today in an age of terrorism and jihad from the side of Islam. Were the Crusades, these historic conflicts between Christians and Muslims, a Christian crusade?
A Christian jihad?
A Christian jihad, yes.
No. It's important first to define our terms. Jihad is an institution that is peculiar to Islam. It's a holy war in the terms of the lesser jihad, as it's called, which is a struggle against the infidel. The greater jihad is the internal struggle a struggle within against one's own sinful nature in jihad. But if we're most people, when they refer to jihad as holy war, referring to the lesser jihad. That is very different than the Christian crusade, as crusades were understood during the Middle Ages. Among the most obvious reasons why it would be different is that jihad in traditional Islam is something that is enjoined on all the faithful, while crusade, as it was understood during the Middle Ages, was not. It was something that was voluntary, that one could choose to do as an act of penance for the salvation of one's soul, but it was by no means required. In fact, there were many people who were enjoined not to go on crusade, for example, the elderly or women, those who would not be useful in a military campaign. So in that one respect, they're very different. Another obvious difference between jihad and crusade would be that jihad, again, speaking from the medieval perspective that I know best, a jihad could be either against an internal enemy, against the faith of Islam, or it could also be an expansionistic war against the infidels outside of the Dar al-Islam, or the abode of Islam. While a crusade, by canon law, could only be a war that was defensive in nature. In other words, it could only be a war that would be for the purpose of restoring lands that had been Christian back to Christian rule, or to defend Christians from attack from outside. So those would be two important distinctions.
What is the biggest myth that you think prevails today about the Crusades as an event?
I think probably the largest one is that the Crusades were wars of conversion, that these were attempts by Christians during the Middle Ages to expand Christianity into the Islamic world, and in other words, to convert by the sword. This, I think, is one of the largest myths because it is the one that is the most wrong. As I just mentioned, Crusades were defensive wars. They were seen as wars, and in fact, even by our own standards, they were wars that were to retake lands that had previously been Christian and restore them to Christian control. And furthermore, those lands that were conquered by Crusaders, there was no aspect of conversion to it. Muslims who lived in those areas were allowed to retain their religion as they had before. The Crusaders' interest was in simply giving back those areas that had been previously Christian back to the Christians themselves.
So if not a holy war in the sense of jihad today from the side of Islam, and if they were, in fact, as you've said several times here, primarily defensive wars in the minds of those who waged them, were the Crusades, and I know we're talking about a big swath of history, but were the Crusades just war?
Yes. When we talk about just wars, we're largely referring to the criteria that would have been set down by St. Augustine, who was himself drawing from the New Testament, primarily St. Paul and the Gospels. From that perspective, a just war was understood as being a war that was declared by legitimate authority, one that was either defensive in nature or to defend against an imminent threat, and one that was that was necessary for those reasons. And in this case, the Crusades met all the criteria of a just war. In fact, they would not have been called by the legitimate authority, in this case the Pope, had they not been. But a crusade was much more than just a just war. There were many just wars. The Mediterranean was littered by just wars. What made a crusade different was that it was also a holy war. It was a war that was not only just, but was seen as being righteous, because it was defending not only just people, but it was defending the church. And not only just the church, but it was also defending Christendom. And we have to remember that in the Middle Ages, the definition of that people held of themselves was being part of their faith. And so Christendom, Western Christendom, was an entity. And so the crusade was to defend the church, Christendom, and that whole, not only God within his church, but also an entire culture. And that was the way it was understood by the knights who took the cross.
So then, with less than a minute before we have to go to our first break, Dr. Madden, is part of our inability to really understand the crusades and the whole medieval mindset due to the fact that the authority that we're talking about in these wars was a mixture of church and state, with very little distinction in the West or in the East of that distinction between church and state.
Yes. Today we tend to think of the legitimate authority for a war as being the state and only the state. And in the Middle Ages, that was not the case. In the Middle Ages, it could be the state was legitimate authority, but the church was seen as having an authority that was above the state. And so that's something that we've lost in the modern era.
We're talking about the Crusades tonight on Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Our guest here in Studio A this evening for this conversation, Dr. Thomas Madden, professor and chair of the Department of History at St. Louis University and author of the books The Fourth Crusade, The Conquest of Constantinople, and The New Concise History of the Crusades. If you have a question or a comment on the Crusades, our phone lines are wide open to take your questions, your comments, 1-800-730-2727, 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address is issuesetc@kfuo.org, issuesetc@kfuo.org. When we come back from this break and we continue our conversation with Dr. Madden on the Crusades, what was the rationale behind them? If it's a defensive war, what instigated this defensive war? What did the world look like where, at least in Europe and the environs around there, the world was either Muslim or Christian. And moving to the modern day, were these ancient conflicts between Christians and Muslims, are they the cause or the root of modern-day terrorism? We'll also get a brief history of the Crusades. They stretch over hundreds of years. There were actually five of them in all, and as time permits, and your questions and your comments as well, we'll talk a bit about each one of the Crusades with Dr. Thomas Madden. Stay tuned.
Historical theology is not just a bunch of names and dates and fact. It's the study of Christ being faithful to his promises.
Dr. Larry Rast of Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, on the importance of historical theology.
Historical theology is the study of theology over the course of time, just like the title says, theology over the course of time. But that can lead some to think that this is a dry, kind of an abstract endeavor, when in fact what we're talking about with historical theology is the faithful confession ongoing through the church by people that Christ has called, seeing him fulfill the promise that he will never leave the church orphaned or forsaken.
For more information about Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, visit their website, www.ctsfw.edu.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
If you're a talk radio junkie like me, you might assume that the programming is free. Commercial advertisers pay for the production costs and staff salaries. Well, that's true for most talk radio shows, but not for Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is listener-supported. That means we rely on you to pay the production salaries and airtime costs for this worldwide outreach. Hi, this is Todd Wilkin asking you to prayerfully consider making a financial gift to Issues Etc. today. You can donate online, issuesetc.org. Click on the What's New section. You can donate by credit card, 1-800-737-0172, or you can donate by check, Issues Etc., Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. Remember, unlike other talk radio shows, Issues Etc. needs your financial support. We depend upon you for the continuation and expansion of Issues Etc. Next week on Issues Etc., we're going to discuss the pop spirituality of Oprah Winfrey with Bob Waldrop of Watchman Fellowship. She hosts the most successful, highly rated talk show in television history. She's been called America's pastor, but what does Oprah Winfrey believe about God, Jesus, and salvation? We'll talk about all of that next week on Issues Etc. with Bob Waldrop. Now, if you'd like to know what we'll be discussing throughout the summer, visit our website, issuesetc.org, issuesetc.org. And while you're there at the website, be sure to check out our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for July, Handling the Word of Truth, Law and Gospel in the Church Today. Now, if you find reading God's Word a bit of a confusing experience, this is the book for you, Handling God's Word. You can purchase it by calling Concordia Publishing House any weekday during regular business hours, 1-800-325-3040. The book costs $12.99 plus shipping and handling, 1-800-325-3040. Or you can browse before you buy at our website, issuesetc.org. The book is called Handling the Word of Truth, our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for July. Dr. Thomas Madden is our guest for talking about the Crusades. Before we go on to talk about these Crusades in particular and the rationale behind them, you have 2 points that I hadn't come across before I read your articles on the Crusades. One is that these were largely and increasingly a failed effort in terms of their goals, the Crusades over these centuries, and also that the term Crusade itself would have been foreign to those who actually engaged in the Crusades.
Right. To take the first point, the only successful Crusade was the First Crusade, and it was fantastically successful, in fact, amazingly successful. It's the only occasion in human history where you have thousands, literally thousands of soldiers marching thousands of miles deep into enemy territory with no lines of supply, no clear plans, no command structure, and having success after success. Not that they didn't have enormous hardships, and not that many people didn't die along the way, but it's from any perspective, it's a fascinating campaign. The First Crusade did succeed in that it made it all the way to the Holy Land and reconquered Jerusalem in 1099.
Can you briefly give us a date on where we're beginning?
Sure. The Crusade begins in 1095 with the call of Pope Urban II, and the soldiers actually begin marching in 1096. The Crusade then makes its way first to Constantinople and then across Asia Minor. It reconquers Nicaea, which is the birthplace of the Christian Nicene Creed that many people, Catholics and Lutherans, still say. And then made its way to Antioch, one of the patriarchal sees of Christianity, and restored that. And then by 1099 made it to Jerusalem and restored Jerusalem to Christian control that it had not been since 636, so quite a long time. That was an enormous success, and the Christians followed up that success in the region by conquering most of the coastal areas around Jerusalem. So, in other words, they conquered most of the area that would today have been Syria, Lebanon, and Israel. Subsequent crusades, however, failed. In fact, the entire history of the crusades, and it's a long history, 5 centuries, 6 centuries of crusading, almost all of those crusades were dismal failures. And the reason for this is that the great power of the world at that time was the Islamic empires. Europe was a very small power compared to the Islamic states. And so it's not surprising that over the course of the long durée, that the Christian Western world would end up on the losing side of this. In fact, that's one of the things about the Crusades that many people don't know, is that the Muslims won them. They won them hands down.
Now, you mentioned several times that these were defensive wars on the part of those who called them, especially the earlier ones. What was it they were defending against? Does it have something to do with the fact that the Muslim Empire and the Muslim states were basically dominating the populated world at that time?
Yes. You have to remember that Islam had been expanding really since the 6th century, and it had expanded largely at the expense of the Christian world. The lands that the early Muslim conquerors conquered were for the most part Christian. And here I'm thinking of the lands of around of the Holy Lands, of course, Syria, Egypt, all of North Africa, Spain, all of those lands. In other words, a good two-thirds of the Mediterranean world, which all of which had been Christian. In fact, the most Christian areas of the world were now under Muslim control. So that's one thing. That of course was something that Christians remembered, but the spark that led to the calling of the First Crusade actually happened much more recently. In the 11th century, Muslim Turks, invaded Asia Minor, the area that's today Turkey, which was also Christian and had been Christian really since the days of St. Paul. And their armies took over most of Asia Minor as a result of these battles. And it was this event that prompted the emperor in Constantinople, a Christian emperor, to go to the only other Christians left in the world, at least the only ones with armies, and that was the Western Europe, and asked the Pope for help. And that appeal to the Pope is what ultimately led to Urban II in 1095 calling the Knights of Christendom in Europe to go to the aid of the Greek Orthodox Christians in the East to try to restore Asia Minor, to try to take those lands back that had been conquered after 1071.
Now, with only about 2 minutes here, and I know I'm asking you to do an awful lot here, well, I'll tell you what, let's do this. When we come back from this break, let's dispel the myth that what we're looking at in the Crusades are these organized campaigns, kind of one, two, three. They happen on a regular basis. It's a distinct period of history and time. Then when they're over, they're over. And talk a bit about the latter part of the Crusades, the ending, the way this thing kind of wanes and dies down. Folks, you can read several articles by our guest in this hour, Dr. Thomas Madden, right there at our Issues Etc. website, issuesetc.org. Look under the What's New section. You'll find it over on the left-hand side, the What's New section, and you'll find these resources on the Crusades, issuesetc.org. And when we come back from this break, we're going to start taking your phone calls and your email, 1-800-730-2727. 1-800-730-2727, and our in-studio email address is issuesetc@kfuo.org, issuesetc@kfuo.org. With only 1 minute here, how long are we talking about? If it begins in the 11th century, when would you say, I know they're debating, but when would you say the Crusades are finally over?
I would say that the Crusades end probably after the Battle of Lepanto, which would be 1571. Now, there are scholars who will put it as late as 1789 with the fall of Malta, but personally, I would put it at 1571. So we're talking about 500 or 600 years. It's not a small thing.
Does it occupy much of the church's attention during this time with about 30 seconds?
Very much. It occupies an enormous amount of both the church's attention and all Europeans' attention.
One thing I wonder about, and we'll get to this when we come back from this break, what did they cost? War is not cheap business. And you wonder whether or not the church, even with its vast resources of the Middle Ages, could afford to do what they were doing in waging the wars of the Crusades, these defensive wars. Dr. Thomas Madden is our guest. Our call-in numbers, we'll take your phone calls after this break. 1-800-730-2727. 1-800-730-2727. We've all heard about the unrest, atrocities, and persecution in the Sudan. Well, LCMS World Relief is on the front lines of providing comfort and hope through several projects. They're helping to provide emergency food for children in southern Sudan, school books and supplies, grinding mills for Sudanese in refugee camps, and enhancements to St. Paul Lutheran Medical Center in Khartoum. Now, for more information on how you can help support relief efforts in the Sudan, look for the LCMS World Relief logo on our homepage, issuesetc.org. Their phone number, 314-996-1683. Late last year, the Republic of Sudan and the Sudan People's Liberation Army reached a peace accord. Many Sudanese who fled their homes will be returning. You can help the resettlement and the education of these refugees by supporting LCMS World Relief, issuesetc.org, or 314-996-1683. LCMS World Relief.
The radio voice of the Lutheran faith for the 21st century. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Todd Wilkin here again. I'm talking with Pastor John Pless. He's author of our Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for July, Handling the Word of Truth, Law and Gospel in the Church Today. Pastor Pless, what does it mean to rightly handle the Word of Truth?
Well, Todd, that's a phrase that comes from Paul's admonition to Timothy when he tells him to study, to show himself approved as a workman who needs not be ashamed, rightly handling or rightly dividing the word of truth. And there Paul is instructing Timothy and us in terms of how we are to understand and use the Holy Scripture, that the Scriptures contain both law and gospel, two different words from God. And the reader and certainly the preacher of Holy Scripture has to know how to make that distinction.
So what's the danger when this distinction between law and gospel is either ignored or allowed to fall by the wayside?
Well, the real danger is to the gospel itself, that the gospel, which is always the good news of salvation in Jesus Christ, always the proclamation, announcement of what God has done for us through the death and resurrection of our Lord Jesus Christ, that is missed, and we hear preaching that focuses on lifestyle, the kind of sermon that speaks of 10 principles of Christian money management or 7 steps to Christian parenting. And that's all in the way of the law. And so people do not hear that consoling and sweet message that we have forgiveness of sins through the blood of Jesus Christ and that we can rest our confidence in Him alone.
So does even the Christian need to hear the message of law and gospel?
That's right. Christians still need to hear both. We need to hear the law because the old man, the old Adam, is still very much with us, and the law puts the old Adam to death. And because we are still sinners, we always need to hear then that glorious word of the gospel that brings us forgiveness of sins, because forgiveness of sins is not a one-time affair for the Christian. Forgiveness of sins is what sustains the Christian life from start to finish.
For more information about our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for July, Handling the Word of Truth, call Concordia Publishing House any weekday during regular business hours, 1-800-325-3040, or go to our website. The book is on the homepage, issuesetc.org. Handling the Word of Truth is $12.99 plus shipping and handling, issuesetc.org, or 1-800-325-3040.
Without fear in the face of your enemies. Be brave and upright that God may love thee. Speak the truth always, even if it leads to your death. Safeguard the helpless and do no wrong. That is your oath.
That little cut from Kingdom of Heaven, a recent movie about the Crusades, has my guest here in studio giggling just a little bit. I'll ask him here in just a moment what he thought about Kingdom of Heaven. We're talking about the Crusades. Dr. Thomas Madden is our guest. I'm Todd Wilkin. Our call-in number, 1-800-730-2727, 1-800-730-2727. You know, the word Crusades often comes up in conversations where Christianity and Christian history and the efforts of Christian culture are being denigrated. And we often hear a lot about what the Christians did during the terrible Crusades, and many times the charitable work of both those times and today are overlooked. There is a Christ-centered, cross-focused relief agency, LCMS World Relief. They're providing relief after tsunamis and hurricanes and other natural disasters, and in places like the Sudan, Kenya, and other third-world countries. For more information on LCMS World Relief, just look for their logo at our homepage, issuesetc.org, or call LCMS World Relief here in St. Louis at 314-996-1683, area code 314-996-1683. 1683, LCMS World Relief. Dr. Madden, I noticed a grin on your face during that cut from that movie Kingdom of Heaven that was ostensibly about the Crusades. What did you think of it in terms of an accurate portrayal?
It's not accurate at all. It was a great movie as far as if you're interested in seeing lots of people get run over by horses or cut up by swords or that type of thing. But as far as the portrayal of the Middle Ages in general, or the Crusades in particular, it was about as far away as you could get. The interesting thing about that movie was that they were able to portray the Crusades without any religion at all. What they did was they did this delicate operation where they were stripped religion out of the whole concept of the Crusades. And it makes the movie incomprehensible. The good guys in the movie are all either agnostics, which was completely foreign to the Middle Ages, or they're people who are genuinely hostile to the concept of religion, which was another foreign concept of the Middle Ages. The bad guys in the movie are all very religious, and they range from either the crazy, like preachers who are glassy-eyed, telling people to go off and kill Muslims for their salvation, or to the just evil or deranged, like a corpse-mutilating priest. So I think this movie actually has a lot more to do with what Hollywood thinks about religion than it does about anything that happened in the Middle Ages.
Folks, if you saw the movie The Kingdom of Heaven and you have a question or comment about the Crusades, give us a call now, 1-800-730-2727, 1-800-730-2727. Two quick questions before we go to our listeners and their phone calls. What did the Crusades cost? Do we have any idea what this cost the church and the state?
No, it was an enormous cost. It was very, very expensive, and it took centuries to do it, although it's not clear what the alternative would have been, since the Islamic empires continued to grow despite the Crusades. But it was extremely expensive. This is important to remember because many people will actually argue that the Crusades were good for Europe because they led Europeans to start to set up trade routes with the East and start to get a taste for luxury goods, and that actually then later led to the development of the Renaissance. This is completely false. The Crusades were a massive drain of capital on Europe. Now, the church itself, for the most part, did not actually foot that bill. There were, after the 13th century, there were a lot of levies of the clergy in Europe who would pay money to help support the Crusades, but they were a drop in the bucket compared to where the real money came from, which was from individual Crusaders. People spent enormous amounts of money to be a Crusader. Yes, their own money. It was not cheap. It was very expensive. The generally a noble who went on Crusade would spend 3 to 4 times their annual income, and even then they'd run out of money. And they did it not because they were expecting booty, but they did it for very medieval reasons. They wanted to go to heaven. They were intensely aware of their sinfulness. These were men, after all, who lived their life by killing people. And so they knew that their chance of getting to heaven was slim. And the Crusades provided an opportunity for them to actually use the one thing they were good at for the benefit of their soul.
Then very briefly, you've talked about how Islamic culture dominated the world at the time of the Crusades and through much of the era that we call the Crusades. And it leads one to wonder, had the Crusades not been mounted, what would have become of Western Europe? But when is the turning point in terms of Islamic dominance? Why does Islamic culture and its hold over the populated world wane, if at all?
Yeah, it's a very good question, and scholars argue about this, and I can't give a definitive answer. I can just give my own opinion. I think it's clear that by far the dominant power is Islam, and Europe comes very, very close to being completely consumed by the Ottoman Empire. But I would say certainly by 1600 or maybe 1630, 1640, that the serious danger has passed. Now, as far as why this happens, why is it that Islam and the Islamic empires begin to wane? My own opinion is that they don't actually wane at all. And I'm not alone in this opinion. I'm actually following Bernard Lewis. And I think that he is right in saying that it's really Western Europe that is doing something that is simply unprecedented. That the advances that you see, they begin in the 14th century with the Renaissance, but continue through the 15th, 16th century with Protestant Reformation, and in the 17th century, the vast expansion that you have in Europe of wealth, knowledge, technology, is simply unprecedented in human history, and that no civilization could keep up with something like that. And so it's not that the Islamic world declined. It's really just that something unprecedented in human history happened. And everyone seemed to decline. The Chinese Empire, the greatest empire in human history anywhere in the world, couldn't keep up with that. So I think it's something that happened that was unique. And that's why it appears to us today, and to Muslims today, that the Islamic world seemed to fall behind.
Let's talk with our listeners, beginning with Donna, who listens on WAVA in Southern Maryland. Donna, thanks for waiting, and welcome to Issues Etc.
Good evening. Thanks for taking my call. My question is for your guest. Based on something that you said earlier, the Crusades were started in defense of Christendom. And I know at that time when the first Crusade started, the East and the Western churches had already split. My question is, my understanding is that some of the Eastern Orthodox churches were actually looted by the Crusaders. And if that is true, based on your research, can you talk a little bit about that and perhaps how they reconciled themselves with doing that when they were there to defend Christianity?
Donna, thank you very much. Good question. Dr. Madden.
Sure. Well, first, it's important to remember that when the first Crusade begins in 1095, there is no formal understanding of a split between the East and the West. There is tension, of course. Most people tend to think of 1054 as being the definitive split between the Catholic West and the Orthodox East, but it's not the case. Medieval scholars all know that at that time, that was not the case. However, it is true that there was tension between the two. In fact, the Crusades themselves had largely been an attempt to try to heal this tension between the two. By having the West help the East, they hoped that any tension might be alleviated. In the First Crusade, there was there might have been some small looting of churches, and there was some tension concerning which bishop should be in charge of which church, particularly in Antioch and then later in Jerusalem. But I think probably when it comes to real looting of Greek Orthodox churches, you may be referring to the Fourth Crusade, which happens about a century later. And in that case, you do have quite a lot of looting. You have crusaders who go to the city of Constantinople, the capital of the Orthodox East, capture the city, and loot the entire town, including the greatest church in Christendom, Hagia Sophia. That, however, was not the purpose of the Crusade, as you might gather. The purpose of that Crusade was originally to go to Egypt, and how it ended up at Constantinople and how these men ended up looting the greatest Christian city in the world is a massive story. In fact, I've written an entire book on it, which I would direct you to, but it's a big, big story. But the point is that that was not the point of the Crusade. Those crusaders did something that they were not supposed to do, and in fact, the Pope had already excommunicated them before they had even gotten to Constantinople.
Folks, Issues Etc. is underwritten in part by Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne is a place that equips future pastors in both biblical theology and good, solid Christian history. For more information, give them a call toll-free, 1-800-481-2155, 1-800-481-2155, or just look for their logo at our website, issuesetc.org, Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana. When we come back, we'll continue taking your questions and your comments on the Crusades. Dr. Thomas Madden is our guest. He's professor and chair of the Department of History at St. Louis University, author of the books, the one he was just mentioning, The Fourth Crusade, The Conquest of Constantinople, and The New Concise History of the Crusades. Why does so much preaching nowadays concentrate on the Christian rather than the Christ? Why is the Bible preached as though it were a self-help, self-improvement manual? Is the preaching of our sin and God's grace in Jesus Christ a thing of the past? Our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for July is called Handling the Word of Truth, Law and Gospel in the Church Today by Issues Etc. regular guest, Pastor John Pless. The book is $12.99 plus shipping and handling. For more information, go to our website, issuesetc.org. You'll find the book on the homepage or call Concordia Publishing House any weekday during regular business hours. Their number, 1-800-325-3040. 1-800-325-3040. Ask for the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for July, Handling the Word of Truth, Law and Gospel in the Church Today by Pastor John Pless.
Equipping the priesthood of all believers. You're listening to Issues Etc.
If you enjoy listening to Issues Etc. on the weekends, did you know that you can listen to 12 new hours of Issues Etc. each week on the Internet? All you have to do is go to our website, issuesetc.org, click the worldwide KFUO logo, and there you can listen to Issues Etc. 24/7, including 12 new programs weekly. The website address again, issuesetc.org.
Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. However, we are not funded by the church body. We're also not affiliated with Lutheran Hour Ministries or the Lutheran Layman's League. Issues Etc. is supported by listeners like you. Please help support this worldwide outreach by making a gift this week. Our address, Issues Etc., Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. Thanks for your prayerful consideration. One 800 737 0172 is the phone number for our Issues Etc. resource line. You can use that number to request a free complimentary copy of our Issues Etc. journal, or to help support Issues Etc. Talk Radio for the Thinking Christian by making a tax-deductible credit card gift. The number again, 1-800-737-0172. Remember, no gift is too small. You can also write us at Issues Etc., Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117, Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. Ross is up next. He calls from Kansas City, and he listens on KCCV. Ross, welcome to Issues Etc.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call tonight.
Sure.
I'm calling with a question for your guest tonight. Granted, the Crusades is really not an area where I have a lot of knowledge, but I just happened to catch the show just driving tonight, and I thought it was interesting that he's referring to the Crusades as a primarily defensive wars or defensive campaigns. And, you know, listening to the show over the course of the past few minutes, I can understand the logic of saying that for the first one, possibly, that there was an encroachment by Islamic empires at the time. But I find it disingenuous, really, from the point of history to call the remaining 4 or 5 centuries of Crusades defensive. So I was just wondering if you could please elaborate on that.
All right, thank you very much. Okay, let's talk about the defensive nature of the Crusades, especially the latter ones.
Actually, the latter ones were even more defensive than the original ones. If we look at Crusades, let's say, after 1291, most people, when they think of Crusades, they're thinking of Crusades that are heading to the Middle East. Those are over with by 1291. By that point, the Muslims have completely reconquered Jerusalem and all of the territories in the Middle East. Crusades continue after 1291, but all of those crusades at that point are specifically designed to recapture something that had recently been taken, or to stop an additional conquest. You have to remember that the Ottoman Empire, which is the Muslim Empire at this point, had already not only conquered all of Asia Minor, but it had now conquered into Europe. It had conquered Greece. It had moved into what's now Bulgaria, Albania, and was moving up throughout all of southeastern Europe. And it continued to move throughout into southeastern Europe, up into Hungary. So those crusades in the 13th century and the 14th century were all attempts to try to stop these continued encroachments into Europe itself. The interesting thing about the later crusades is that while the early crusades were Europe's attempts to try to help their Christian brothers in the East, the later crusades became desperate attempts to try to stop Europe itself from being invaded by Muslims. And those also failed, because the Ottoman Empire continued to advance into Europe, well into, as I say, the Ottomans conquered all of southeastern Europe. They conquered Hungary. They moved into Austria and even came very, very close to conquering all of Italy.
How would you respond to someone who says, it sounds like you're trying to justify everything that the Christian Crusaders did? How do you respond?
Well, I'm a historian. My interest isn't really in justifying anything. My interest as a medieval historian is primarily to try to explain the way people saw things during the Middle Ages. We today live in a very different time, and that's why we don't have crusades any longer. But my interest is trying to understand how Christians at the time understood this. And also, by the same token, how Muslims at the time understood what they saw happening as well. And what I'm saying is, in fact, the way they saw this. And I think by explaining that, it allows us to better see that even with our own concepts of defense, self-defense, that it allows us to understand better the legacy of the Crusades today.
Earl is in Oakland, California, and for the rest of you as well, 1-800-730-2727. Earl listens on KFAX. Earl, welcome.
Yes, hi. It's been a while since I last called the show, and I must say, very interesting guest, great topic. One of the things that always bothered me about when I listen to Muslims or primarily people of Middle Eastern descent were Muslim or even people here in the from the West who are generally more liberal in their perspective is their condemnation of the Crusade is that they never really seem to hold the Muslims responsible for their actions that led to the Crusade. And even today, in our modern times, we see the actions of the Muslims in places like the Sudan, which actually mirrored Muslim behavior centuries ago. As a man of African descent, it was not Europeans that introduced slavery into Africa. It was actually the Muslims who introduced it 1,000 years before the first Europeans actually set foot.
Earl,
continent.
Thank you for the call, Earl. Dr. Madden, your response to his comments there.
Well, the Muslims, have to remember, from their perspective, and as I said, as an historian, I try to understand both perspectives. The Muslim perspective from this was that God was calling them to expand the abode of Islam. And therefore, by waging war on what they called the Dar al-Harb, or the abode of war, they were doing the will of God. The Ghazi warriors, who were the border warriors, expanded into Asia Minor because they believed that God was calling them to do it. And that was the primary impetus behind both the conquest of Asia Minor and also primarily the impetus behind all the rest of Muslim expansionism before that.
Mike calls from Seattle. He listens on KGNW. Mike, our time is short. Welcome to Issues, Etc.
Certainly. Good evening. My question was, it's not unusual to hear the worst about the Crusades, even in the weekly news magazines. But I was wondering if the professor could tell us whom he sees as the man, either a churchman or a lay baron, who best exemplified the ideal of the Crusade and of the Crusader.
That's a very good question, Mike. Dr. Madden, about a minute and a half, no more, to answer.
Yeah, it's a tough question, too. But I guess, given that I'm in St. Louis and I teach at St. Louis University, maybe I should say St. Louis. Louis the Ninth was one of the great Crusaders. He was the King of France. He led a crusade to Egypt. And I guess the reason I mention him is that he was universally acclaimed during his time. And even today, it's hard to find an historian, even as jaded as we all are, to say something bad about Louis. He cared deeply about Jerusalem and the fate of the Holy Land. And he spent his entire life not only working for the benefit of Jerusalem, but also trying to be a king who was so good that God would bless him with the honor of restoring Jerusalem to Christianity.
And those goals, one more time, that our caller Mike had mentioned, those goals of the Crusades, as quickly as you can here with 30 seconds.
Of Louis the Ninth, you mean?
Yes, as exemplified by Louis the Ninth.
Yeah, it was to restore, in particular for Louis the Ninth, it was to restore Jerusalem. The city, Jerusalem was seen as a relic itself. It was sanctified by the life, death, and resurrection of Christ. And so to restore that to Christian control was the greatest thing that any Christian monarch could do.
Folks, we're coming to you live this Sunday night. It's July the 24th. We'll continue to respond to your phone calls and your email on the subject of the Crusades with Dr. Thomas Madden. Our number, 1-800-730-2727. We have some free phone lines there. Call during this break, 1-800-730-2727. We'll also give away Dr. Madden's book, The New Concise History of the Crusades, to listeners with the best questions and comments in the next hour, 1-800-730-2727. This break is a great time to call, 1-800-730-2727, or email us at issuesetc@kfuo.org. Be sure to tune in live to the next hour on the Internet, not on the radio, but only on the Internet, right there at our website, issuesetc.org. When you get there, click the Listen Online link, and you can listen to the next hour of Issues Etc. as we continue our conversation with Dr. Thomas Madden on the Crusades. Well, there is no doubt about it. Whether one looks far into the history of Christian civilization and of the church, or whether one looks more short term, the past is checkered. No attempt to justify everything that took place. But the noble goals may be ill-informed, but the noble goals of defending one's neighbor, defending Christians who were persecuted, regaining to Christian control those lands that had been taken, these are not ignoble goals. They went forth with a sword to do these things. The church, of course, possesses a sword of far greater power and far greater effect. It does not necessarily gain us territory or land or even fame, but the sword of the Spirit, God's Word, and the message of Christ crucified, the sword the church possesses now and forever. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc.
Listen to Pastor Todd Wilkin weekly on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for Issues Etc. to continue. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. Or you can donate by credit card on our resource line, 1-800-737-0172. 1-800-737-0172. Visit us this week on the World Wide Web. Our website address, issuesetc.org. issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.